Monster in a Glass, where we explore a cocktail, the history behind it, the origins, the name, the creator, and then go deeper into the history of the time period.
So deep.
Put your butt to sleep.
Come on, Ice Cube.
That was good.
Everybody knows today was a good day.
Yeah, that was...
You can't say so deep, and then not have put your butt to sleep. Come on.
Well, we're doing that. You can.
We're doing the honeymoon cocktail.
What? The honeymoon.
That's how you really know.
We're setting it up for the honeymoon.
That's how you really know.
Yeah, so deep. I'm joined by Mr. Jason Cruz.
Hello.
Who's done the research on the honeymoon cocktail. Yeah.
The dude who digs.
Research guy.
Is that what it says that you're on your name tag?
Yeah.
Yeah, research guy.
I just tell people. They're like, who are you? I'm like, research guy.
Nice. Mine says music learning guy. Super Nintendo Chalmers.
That's our good friend, Mr. Nick Layman.
The bone dog.
Yeah, bone. I bone all the time.
He slides his bone.
All seven positions.
Are there seven positions?
Seven and a half, if you know what you're doing.
I don't.
I think I've only got three for my bone.
You're a three-bone professional.
That's right.
That's funny.
Okay.
Honeymoon cocktail.
Where did you honeymoon?
I just had our honeymoon on our 10th anniversary.
Nice.
In Germany and France.
That's cool.
We didn't do a honeymoon
when we got married.
Ours was kind of the same. It was like a weird cabin in the woods. It was like, is this it?
I remember that movie. Yeah,
it was totally a movie. It was like, I think they're home. What the fuck?
I don't know, but I hear them in the walls.
Yeah. I want this to be over. It was strange.
Bad.
Yeah.
How about you?
Mackinac Island.
Oh, that's cool.
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of walking.
Because there's no cars.
There's no cars. Yeah. There's no phones. There's no nothing. You just have to walk everywhere.
Oh, paradise.
And lots of fudge. Walking and fudge.
Pass.
I pass. That's some honeymoon, Cam. I hope she doesn't listen to this one.
Okay, but in the midst of this, there is actually a cocktail.
There is. The honeymoon cocktail is actually a cocktail.
And what's in it?
This is an interesting combination. It has Benedictine, apple brandy, lemon juice, and Curacao. And where it shows up first, Haig points this out, and it actually, based on what I could find, it is true. It first shows up in 1917 in the Hugo Enslin book, Recipe for Mixed Drinks.
What's Benedictine first?
Right?
You know, I've seen it in drinks, but I was never quite sure what it was. So Benedictine is a French herb-based liqueur. And the recipe for it was actually supposedly devised by an Italian monk called Bernardo Vincelli, who lived in a Benedictine abbey of Fécamp in Normandy.
Okay.
It was discovered and commercialized in 1863 by a local merchant, Alexandre Legrand. He called it Benedictine in memory of Dom Vincelli's affiliations with the Benedictine monks. Monks. And they actually said that it's reinforced in liqueur's ecclesiastical connotations by printing Dom, standing for Deo Optimo Maximo, to God Most Good, Most Great, on its label. So it has religious...
Yeah, it says 1510 on this bottle. Like, it goes way back.
Cam, you found a bottle from 1510?
Yeah.
Wow.
It's kind of dusty.
No wonder it was so expensive.
Yeah, it's actually... I think it's pretty old, but it was commercialized in the 1860s. Which is a weird thing to say. 1860s, they were commercializing this.
Yeah, yeah. Because that's really fucking old still, you know?
Right, right.
It's a fancy bottle.
Yeah.
Got a wax seal and everything. That is fancy.
So it's a liqueur. I see it a lot in drink recipes, but never had it.
Wow.
Oh. It's burny.
It's totally coming out my nose.
It's got an oily mouthfeel. Like, it's heavy. Damn.
It tastes like drinking orange peels on fire.
Yeah, that's a good... Yeah, that's it.
No, I'm not getting orange.
Really? There's something very spicy about it, though.
So it is...
I'm getting the heat. It's like the vapors are coming out of my nose, but... Yeah. But on my tongue, it's just a kind of an oily sweetness.
Oily. It's a very...
It's not, but I can't really detect.
Oh, I know what it is. It's burning whale blubber and, and herbs.
Oh my God. That shit is no joke. Don't eat muktuk. It's gross.
So the Benedictine is, it's a flavored liqueur, but it's based on double distilled brandy. So that might be where the burny part is coming from.
Where do they get the heaviness, though?
But they said that it's flavored with some 75 herbs and spices.
Yeah, okay. Secret recipe.
It is the Kentucky Fried Chicken of...
It really is.
...liqueurs, I guess. Or more so, 75. Are there 75 spices? I don't know. Anyway, that's a lot to put into one liqueur.
Yeah.
Seems like overkill, but...
It's
decent.
Yeah, it's not
it's
bad.
Very burny.
I want to drink that in a robe.
Yeah.
That's, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Sitting in a chair, in a finely upholstered chair.
Oh, I thought you meant like the cup would be the robe. That was really weird.
A small decorative robe for my cup.
I want to wring it out of the terry cloth. into my mouth.
After a long night of frolicking with the monks. I'm going to wring it out into my mouth.
I'm going to suck on a terry cloth.
That's where at least 30 of the spices come from.
Oh, Jesus.
It's pretty fucking good, though. I like
it. No,
it
is. It's good. You know what? It's pretty pleasant. No, I agree with you. I think it's like one of those things that you would warm up by a fire. Yeah, you know, it's not harsh. It's not too harsh where you couldn't just drink it by itself. But it's a bit burny, which I think is the brandy part of it.
Yeah.
So this drink shows up in 1917. And one thing that Hank points out is that, and correctly at that, is the original recipe calls for apple brandy. Ensign calls for apple brandy. And it does not specify for Applejack or Calvados, though this does show up later. And even as early as 1925, there is a book from London called the Buckstone Book of Cocktails, and they have a honeymoon cocktail and it's made with Calvados. Now, I should say, what's interesting about that is that they're calling for Calvados, and one of the authors of the book worked at a French restaurant. So it's possible that's where the Calvados part comes from.
Yeah, that makes sense.
The Savoy Cocktail Book, 1930, calls for apple brandy. That was in London. And then in 1931, you have a book called 100 Cocktails, How to Make Them and What to Eat with Them. And that's from Kansas, which was...
Kansas,
right? You're like, big who trend the center. Fuck lives in Kansas? Nobody lives in Kansas. But they're making cocktails in Kansas in 1931. Right before the Depression, which was... I was like, that's weird.
Wow, that is.
But they have a honeymoon cocktail, and it is made with Applejack.
That's American.
It's created by Hugo Ensslin in the U.S., he says apple brandy. It goes across to London. They make it with Calvados. Craddock calls for apple brandy. Probably he was just getting it from Ensslin. And then it goes back to the U.S. and it's made with Applejack.
Wow.
It shows up in PGD's book, but he calls for apple brandy. That's not surprising, though. We've talked about this 100 times. He was pulling things from Craddock and McElhenney. So with this recipe, probably wasn't experimenting and saying, well, it's America, let's use Applejack. Yeah. Or, you know, he was probably like, well, it says apple brandy, so let's use that. Mm. There was a book in 1933 called Hollywood's Favorite Cocktail Book. It called also for apple brandy. Cafe Royal Cocktail Book, 1937, mentions it, but it's no recipe. And then Lucius Beebe's book, The Stork Club Bar Book from 1946, calls for Applejack. So, looking at all of this, it doesn't show up in that many recipe books, a handful. It is kind of interesting how it starts with apple brandy, it goes across the pond, it works its way back, and ends up Calvados, and then Applejack back in America. So I was digging around, because it didn't show up in that many places, and I just wanted to kind of make sure that it didn't show up earlier. You know, it's always possible that it shows up earlier, but I came across a honeymoon cocktail in a newspaper article, and it was in the National Police Gazette from 1905. And I was like, whoa, the police were making honeymoon cocktails.
Giving them out, no doubt. Right.
And
you're feeling bad. You need a honeymoon cocktail.
Right. And then I started looking at the recipe, and it was Angostura bitters, creme de moderine, which I'm not sure what that is.
Wow.
1 dash of sloe gin, 1 dash vermouth, 1 dash blackberry juice, 1 cafe glass whiskey. Stir well with a spoon. And I looked at the recipe, and then I looked at the recipe from the other honeymoon cocktail, and I was like,
yeah.
This isn't even a case of, oh, well, maybe the flavors would... No, it's a totally separate drink.
They just shared the same name.
Exactly. Yeah. And this was from 1905, so 12 years before Ensslin. And the fact that it's showing him in the Police Gazette, I think it was like, fireman's chili. Like, who makes the best cocktail? Yeah. Yeah. I do. I make this thing that's, you know. So I'm going to say it's not related. I went off into a weird angle. I wanted to sort of look at where the term honeymoon came from, because...
I dig that.
We have honeymoon. I think everybody has an idea of what it means. We talked about, you know, where do we go on our honeymoon. But what I started with, actually, was to look at the breakdown of the word, because honeymoon, it's a weird thing when you actually think about
it. Yeah, it really
is. Honeymoon. Why did he call it a honeymoon? So I started looking...
It's a period of time.
Right. But why? I mean,
it's a lunar cycle.
Is it? Maybe.
Especially with honey, too. Like, honey is such a... It invokes.
Right. Sweetness. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a sweet thing. I mean, I had an idea. It's not that complicated. I thought, well, it's a period of time with the sweetness, your sweetheart or whatever. But as I was looking into it, it's actually really old. I mean, these words are really old. These terms are really old. It was kind of interesting. So the term honey, or at least the word it derives from, with the meaning of a sweet, sticky fluid made by insects and related uses, actually is super old. The OED, Oxford English Dictionary, has it as an Old English word from around 950 AD.
It's the same word?
In Old English, it is spelled H-U-N-I-G. It means the same thing. It's the derivative. But when you look at it, and in relevance to honeymoon, it also means good, pleasant, desirable sweetness. It's also used as a term of endearment or affectionate form of address, sweetheart, darling. It is a natural progression. It's not that complicated. You can see a direct link. You know, when they start using it in that way, it is in the 14th and 15th century. And moon, is inherited from Germanic. Old Germanic. It predates 950. It's just when start showing up in print is when they is Old English.
Yeah, I'm sure that they
for a very
they
long
had
while.
A name for the thing that was in the sky.
Yeah,
and goddamn
right. Like, what's that? I don't know.
I've never seen that.
Just because they could write it down.
Don't name it. Just ignore it. Pretend it's not there.
Yeah.
We gotta wait a few hundred years before we can figure out a name for it. There is ancient Greek, and yeah, everybody has a term for moon, but the term moon as it relates to the construction of the word is also inherited from Germanic. But the reference is also, again, from 950. The time period is, Old English, where it's referring to the celestial body. Before that, I mean, you have Latin words of luna. So it's a different derivation of the word. So in relation to the honeymoon, as you mentioned, it's the period from one new moon to the next, a lunar month or a month. And that shows up again in the 14th century. The term honeymoon shows up in print as early as the 1500s, with the original meaning of the period immediately following marriage as characterized by love and happiness. So it's showing up super early, way earlier than I thought. I thought honeymoon is a new thing. It's, going back to the 1500s. But the other meaning is also, and this is still in use today, is the initial period of friendly relations, goodwill, or enthusiasm, and they use it in terms of political context. So it's
right.
Like,
yeah.
The honeymoon period, we've all heard that. How we tend to use it now is the holiday taken by a newlywed married couple, traditionally immediately following their wedding. That part of it actually dates to about the late 1700s. So that context of an actual...
A period of time...
Where you're doing like a holiday thing.
Where everything's good and happy before it gets real.
Yeah.
Right. Before you figure out
like,
that
holy shit, your fucking toothbrush is like not put away, asshole.
Yeah.
What the fuck are these tampons doing?
The moment he starts making that noise where he's sucking his teeth.
Snoring alone, holy
I'm
shit.
I'm gonna fucking stab him.
I'm gonna stab
him.
Put
his underwear on the doorknob.
God damn it.
Who keeps their underwear on the doorknob?
Is that not a thing? I didn't know that was grounds for...
It's getting real, fucker.
Yeah.
It's a signal. It's not...
Do laundry.
I'm a bad memory. I gotta leave myself some...
some signs.
But there was a related term that came up, which was honey month. And, I mean, it was actually referring to, like, the first month of marriage. And I thought, oh, this must be, like, a thing that came afterwards. But it actually was kind of running coinciding. It was a less popular phrase, but 1633, it shows up in print and runs through the 1900s. Where they're saying honey month, and to mean the first month after marriage.
Wow.
So, again, what you were saying is that, like, this honeymoon period where everything's really great. So it's running concurrently. So I started looking into the history of honeymoons because I had no idea. I was like, well, when did this become a thing where you get married and then you're like, oh, I'm going off. It really just originally did mean the period of time, right? Like the month after. You know, maybe not necessarily a month, but like a short period of time after you got married, which was characterized by goodwill and sexual passion. But, you know, and that it's a compound word from honey and moon. So, I mean, all of those things that kind of... It makes sense. The sweetness, your sweetheart.
It's like a sweet month.
Moon indicating a period of time.
You get a fucking month where it's awesome.
But they also... Then
it fucking sucks.
well, that's what it was sort of getting at in this thing that I found in a book called The Marriage Customs of the World. It says that it's indicating a waning of a period of affection and sweetness. So you're...
The idea
it's
like, is, it ain't gonna last.
It's almost over. Yeah, everything's cool, but after this, it's gonna fucking... blow.
Exactly. That wedding night, it's not going to happen. Yeah. You know?
It's not necessarily 1 month. It's just, there's a time period. So, the origins of the honeymoon began in European wedding traditions, and that really with the upper class in the 19th century.
Yeah, that makes sense, because everybody else was like, take a month off.
Yeah, what? Like, the minute the ceremony's over, I have to go back to work. So, it really was. It was like with the upper class, it was a bridal tour, a wedding trip that they lasted several weeks or months, you know, after they got married.
Makes sense.
But as the middle class grew, you know, after the Industrial Revolution, they start to emulate the bridal tour. Yeah, right. I mean, that happens now. I mean, any reality show is like, well, how do we live like rich people? It's like, well, we mimic it in a very, like...
Our weddings and lifestyle now, the way we marry people and relationships is so different, so vastly different than it has been for hundreds of years. Like you were saying, after the Industrial Revolution and there became more middle-class people, people started marrying for love more. Prior to that, it was like, who's going to pair up with me? Who's going to run the shop with me?
Yeah, exactly.
Necessity.
Necessity, really.
Who can run the farm while I'm in the fields?
A good partnership.
You seem like a good, sturdy gal. We'll get married.
Yeah, it's like,
can you bear 20 children?
Yeah,
because that's what I need.
Yeah, I need 20 workers.
Exactly.
You know, I make shoes, but I need someone to run the sewing machine.
Again, listeners, we live in the fattest, laziest times of all fucking no.
That's right. We get to have the luxury of saying, but I love you.
Oh, my God.
I'm married.
Can we have next generation? Can the Romulans fucking show up now, please? God damn it. The Vulcans, where are we? Let's work on warp drive.
Like the middle class. I mean,
spoiled.
If you see this is happening, you're like, okay... I like that. Sounds pretty cool. You're going on a several month bridal tour or trip to Europe, but
it was almost a business thing. It was like it was smart. Now it's just like, yeah, you're cute,
right? I mean,
I'm gonna change my status on social media.
But it was like a status thing. Yeah. I mean, they were mimicking this, but they certainly couldn't afford to do what
they weren't
royalty.
Doing. They weren't doing several months around the world.
No, it was like.
Let's go tour our love.
We're going to go to Kansas.
We're going to go to the, you know, down the block.
Right.
Have lunch and then
away
go
away from
home.
Our families. It can be down the block. They can't walk that far. But that became sort of the beginning of this idea of like, well, you go somewhere after you get married. And then with cars and trains, it really just, this is much later, of course. But this became a thing. It became a tradition that you do and...
Like a period Niagara where Falls. You really get to go enjoy your nuptials for a little bit.
But it really wasn't until the mid-20th century that this actually happened. I mean, where it was really a thing where you did that. I mean, it started in the 18th and 19th century where people were doing it, but everyday people couldn't afford to do something like
this. I mean,
this.
As a sidebar, do you think this is a thing nowadays? Like, how much of average folk actually do the honeymoon thing? Because it costs. It's money, you know?
Yeah.
It really costs.
Like I said, we did our honeymoon 10 years after we got married, right.
Yeah. As for us, it was gifted to us, and it wasn't that great. Like, we're still looking to do it again, you know? Yeah. Like, it's kind of a thing that's it's antiquated. It's not practical.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I think some people take it really seriously and are really into it, and it's a part of the wedding, you know? Yeah. It's like, it's all part of the planning.
And even the way we're talking about it, it's almost like we're talking about, you know, you're saying it's antiquated, but at the same time, you also, there's this undertone of expectation.
Yeah, like it should happen.
Yeah. But we don't have the money, or we don't have the time.
Right.
But it's like, but, you know, as Jay was saying, it's
they're following.
It's relatively new. Yeah. This concept of everybody going out and having some time. But yeah, I don't think, you know, people just weren't thinking that
you
way.
You could see how it was luxurious.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if you're royalty at the turn of the 19th century, shit, yeah, you can go on like, I'm going on a world tour for the next you know, year. Right. I'm out of town.
But it's like, you know, for them, it's a honey life.
Right.
You know, it's like, how is this different
from the beginning of our honey?
Well, and that's the thing is, like, you have the middle class building up, and so they're like, well, I want some of that too. I want to do that, but it probably was pathetic. I mean, but before that, what the hell are you going to do? Be like, well, I have to take a break from my 19-hour shift in the coal mine.
It was probably one night. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was probably like, this night we get to have sex, and it's great, and then tomorrow...
Okay, I have to get you pregnant tonight, because I have to work for the next 95 days, straight. So, it was much more recent than I thought, but I guess I never really thought about it. But yeah, I mean, it didn't really happen until the middle of the 20th century, where it was like a thing, where people started going to Hawaii and Fiji. And
they took a vacation, basically.
Right, and yeah, and it became a thing. As I was digging through some of this, this thing came up where it was... But they were like, well, honeymoon, the myths, the origin myths of where it came from. And I was like, oh, well, let's take a look at this. I'm always interested to see how people interpreted where honeymoons came from. Yeah. Because what we just talked about seems logical. You have wealthy people who were like, we got married, we should celebrate. Yeah, how best to celebrate than like traveling the world and living luxuriously. And then middle class people were like, I want part of that too.
Yeah, I'll do a day of that.
But there were these other things where I was reading it and I'm going, this can't possibly be true. It sounds like something that somebody's just a straight out lie.
Yeah. I read one where they talked about it being a month of drinking mead.
Yes. What I'm about to say is kind of all tied up in that. So one thing that I read is like that people have written that the honeymoon refers to a time when marriage was by capture. That the woman's tribe would pursue the couple to attempt to rescue her. So it was necessary for the man to take his bride into hiding for about a month. Hence the moon cycle. Until tempers cool, because everybody knows that it only takes a month for them to be like, cool, that's fine. Yeah, sure. I'm
it's
over.
It's been a while.
Ask the Hatfields and McCormick.
Yeah, right. They're still fighting.
And so during that time, the couple would get to know each other. Everything would happen. Cool. They would drink a lot of mead, and mead was made from honey.
Mead.
So, and it's as I'm reading this, I'm going, this can't be right. This sounds like a fucking stupid.
Way
it doesn't
made
even.
Up.
That
that's
sounds
so
like,
made up.
Right?
Yeah.
But like, you're talking about tribes.
They're talking about tribes, and so where they attribute this is
so
to...
That's like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're going that far back, you're pre-Roman.
Yeah.
Where this whole thing comes from is something they said is, and I'm going to butcher this because I don't know anything about linguistics or how to pronounce anything, but they say it comes from a supposed phrase in Old Norse called Hunnit Monother, which is spelled HJUNOTTSMANATHR. So you could sort of see honeymoon in there.
Yeah.
I was like, I just want to Google this word. I want to see what people are saying. Right away, people were like, There was a Wikipedia page that was basically people saying, this is an internet hoax. This is not based in any linguistic reality. It doesn't match Old Norse. It doesn't match any language structure. And people were like, everything I know about Old Norse, this is not Old Norse. That's not the word for honey. And
it's the aliens.
Yeah. They're trying to make you take a big trip you can't afford. It's put on by Viking fucking cruises.
Viking cruises.
Like cruises taken.
And then I started looking around and I was able to find books. And even looking at the origins of the word, the individual words. And that's why I kind of went into the individual words of honey and moon. Because when you look at how old it is, saying it shows up in Old English in 950 AD... that's just because it's written record. Yeah. But before, they know, based on other records, how it was pronounced. So Old Norse comes from the Northern Germanic branch of language. What it eventually develops into is Icelandic, Faroese, and Norwegian. And to a lesser extent, it's roughly related to modern-day Danish and Swedish. So Norland. And that goes back to like the 8th century. Old Norse ran from like the 8th century to the 14th century, and it overlaps with all these other languages. So when you look at where it comes from, it really is deriving from Germanic, but Old Frisian, Old Dutch, Old Saxon, all of the, you know, German, Swedish, Danish, Old Icelandic, all of these words, none of them are even close to what they're spelling this old, you know, H-J-U-N-O-T.
Yeah.
It's all H-U-N-I-G-I-C-E. It's all very structurally related. And then if you look at moon, you know, it's going to be sort of related. So they spell it M-A-N-A-T-H-R in this Old Norse, or this Old Norse as they're saying. But again, it dates back to the same time period. So you have Mona, Main. So it's like sort of roughly related. But again, it's not matching up.
They put it together. Someone somewhere was like, in got married. Let's honeymoon.
Yeah, right. Silmarillion.
Yeah. Right. It was from the Silmarillion.
Yeah.
I will go with that before I'll say it's Old Norse.
I think
Norse.
That's wrong. I mean, pretty fucking close.
I mean, these words were there, and clearly it's dating back to the 15th century. So where they're talking about it, where there was a thing that rich royal people did, you know, that's clear. Then I found this thing in the Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable where they talk about it's being, meaning the month after marriage, and it spent away from home, and it's derived from an ancient Teutonic practice of drinking honey wine for 30 days after marriage. But they say, however, this appears to be a myth, probably derived from the ideas and theories put forward in the writing of the 19th century author Sir John Lubbock, who seemed to be particularly enthusiastic about showing dubious connections between the wedding practices of his day and those of distant history, particularly the supposed custom of marriage by capture. So here's a statement saying, like, this guy in the 19th century was trying really hard to, like, prove this theory that, yes, people dragged off women by their hair and dragged them into a cave. There was no evidence that ever happened. Yeah. Or that honeymoon derived from it, or that they were.
But that gets me, because, like, we're still talking about it. So, like, this guy was, like, making up shit. And we're like, yeah, maybe.
But it is the fucking internet of the
19th century. I read two fucking books and I'm an expert, fuckers.
Not even reading books. He's just like, you know what I think?
Yeah. I'm going to write a book. I'm fucking wasted.
And they were like, well,
I'm going to write a book.
it's in print, so it must be true.
It must be true, bitches. You know, go on a honeymoon.
It is.
Viking cruises want you to.
Right, exactly. You know, the only other thing I could find on this was this very strange thing, and I don't know what to make of it. I was really trying to find if there were instances saying, like, Hugo Enslin created the honeymoon cocktail, or the honeymoon, you know, anything. And I came across these two news articles. So the first one says, the supporting bill, it's from something called, the article's called Dancer's Top Bill at Earl, 1925, January 25th, Washington Post. The supporting bill will include Earl Kavanaugh and Al Lester in The Love Boat, in quotation marks. So I'm guessing this is quite... The Love Boat. Styled as a honeymoon cocktail, in quotation marks.
Wow.
This is a farce. It seems like what they're saying is they're starring in this play styled as a honeymoon cocktail, which is a farce. So I was like, was this a thing, like a honeymoon cocktail, was called a farce. Now, this is after Hugo Enslin. I was like, I don't know what to do with this. And then I found another article. And this one was even weirder because it's talking about Orson Welles and Rita Hayworth's marriage. It's 1943. It's called Tossing the Lambs to the Lions in the Washington Post, September 14th, 1934. Or 43, sorry. They'll honeymoon in the Hollywood Hills. Next, Mexico, where Orson will finish his South American picture and then to London. He to star in Korda's War and Peace, she to entertain the soldiers. Paris in the spring? Orson said to me. Could be, the zip in a honeymoon cocktail. And I was like,
wow.
What does any of those words mean?
So weird.
It's not even like sentences.
So could be the disjunct.
Zip, could be the zip in a honeymoon cocktail.
So it sounds like the zip interviewer in. Saying, are you going to Paris? And he's, Paris in the spring? Could be. The zip in a honeymoon cocktail. What the fuck are you talking about,
Orson? Is it could be, or is it could be the zip in a honeymoon cocktail?
Yeah, I think it's that.
Yeah, could be, period. The zip in a honeymoon cocktail. Yeah. And then the next part of it is, he's like an unbroken colt, said Rita. One minute I want to reform him, and the next I tell myself, the minute he starts not losing his shirts, he loses something he mustn't lose. I was like, I don't understand.
That is so out.
People in the 40s talk like fucking
riddles. Riddles. His talk is so giant, it hits me in the face every morning. Like, what the fuck? Jesus.
Everyone in the 40s was Rain Man. Like, yeah, I don't understand anything that they're saying.
I mean, we need that again. That's what I'm saying. Like, we
Orson
need
Welles,
that.
Tell me what you're going to do on your honeymoon. Well, the zip in a honeymoon cocktail.
Yeah, exactly. What? We fucking need that.
But they were just like, write that down.
Goddamn bee's knees.
It's the bee's knees, you fucker.
He's like an unbroken colt because sometimes he loses things, sometimes he doesn't. What? That's Orson Welles for you.
Vaguely Sarah Palin.
Oh my god. Yeah. But that's what we're missing, right? Isn't that what we're missing? Like we are missing, like, just make shit up. You know, just make shit up.
But
like,
I bet you if you went through any entertainment magazine and used it as a corpus for linguistic analysis, we'd probably come up with the same shit. We'd be like, what did Kim Kardashian say?
It's great.
I don't understand these words.
It's great.
As the sentence it constructed.
How did these come together? To form an
great
idea.
It's great. It's like, I want to
and
take,
this was just
I want,
a piece of this.
I want to take a class on this rhetoric. Because, like, this is some genius shit.
You know what? I'll send you the whole article. Because the whole article did not... It made even... It was just a whole big article.
It's genius.
And I was like, I didn't know Orson Welles was married to Rita Hayworth. And then I was like... And now, I don't understand what the fuck they're talking about.
That class will be taught by fucking Charlie Sheen. You know? Tiger Blood. You know? Like, it'll be brilliant.
And then, win.
I said win 50 times. So it will obviously happen.
I mean, let's say... 1943, Orson Welles. I'm trying to think of, like, that's after Citizen Kane. It's after The Third Man. I feel like he might be getting into his very overweight, very sad days. I don't know. He was married to Rita Hayworth. I don't know. I don't understand this. But I find a lot of newspaper articles like this where the vernacular of the time, they were like, quick, write that down. And you're like, that doesn't mean anything to anyone. Like, did it make sense to anybody at the time? Would somebody reading this in 1943 go,
be like, and how?
You're right. That's what they said. Cold.
They would say, like,
yes, that happens to me all the time. Yeah. I'm always losing something I mustn't lose. Oh. Like, what?
That Orson.
I identify with Orson Welles.
Like, wow. Clearly, honeymoon cocktail meant something else.
But yeah, but I couldn't find it anywhere else. It was like these two articles and nowhere else, and I thought...
But it also seems like a fair distance away from when the cocktails were made. Why were people naming cocktails honeymoon?
You know, one thing that occurred to me, and we've already talked about this with the aviation, I think it was, with the Hugo Enslin's untimely... sad death. Let's say sad death, where he killed himself. He was married for 20-plus years... And then his wife died, like, you know, after this book was published, so like several years after this book was published, his wife dies, then he killed himself a few years later, and the rumor was that he was engaged to be married, but then he saw his fiance with another man, and I've never been able to prove that that was the case. It is true he did kill himself. I found his death record where it says he shot himself with a .22 caliber gun. There, it doesn't say he was distraught over, you know, it just, that's theory.
He's a tragic figure.
But I guess, is it just a name to stick on a cocktail because honeymoons are nice?
I think so.
I mean, it's because you found that other version that had nothing to do with this version.
Right.
It kind of seems like that, where it's
like...
Good
name. Yeah. It's a good name.
It fits. It's
The only thing I could think of that
It's the kind of thing, well, you're on your honeymoon, what are we going to have? Yeah. Well, you put a honeymoon cocktail on the menu, and...
That's true.
Now you create a market. That seems far-fetched, but...
No, it's not at all. I mean, musicians do that all the time. Like,
the honeymoon song.
Oh, my God. Or the father-daughter song. Like, all the country songs right now, like, making money. They're about, my little girl, I danced with her first, you are danced with her second, asshole. You know, like that's a market, you know? Like, okay. It really is. So, again, if you're going to sell booze... You need a name. You need something that somebody goes, I'm on my honeymoon.
Yeah, okay.
Why? I need to drink booze. It's really small.
Yeah. You know, and I think to some extent, I think it is like something that is just, well, we got to name it something.
Yeah.
But I almost started thinking that maybe there is something behind this. That's why I was really digging hard to see if there was an alternative meaning to honeymoon cocktail, if it meant something else. And when I was like, oh, it means farce, but it's like, I couldn't find that anywhere else, so I don't know. The way that the sentence is phrased is vague enough that I can't say for sure that honeymoon cocktail means farce.
I'm not sure if it does, based on what you read.
Right, no. And so it could be that he just named it. Maybe he had a different idea of what honeymoon meant. Maybe it did mean, like, the period of time, like, after you have a relationship, and not necessarily in terms of marriage. It's really one of those that I don't think we'll ever be able to figure out why he called it the honeymoon cocktail.
This could just be, like, a throbbing hangover, you know, where you're just like, ugh.
I know.
What? You have a beard?
I saw the way you brushed your teeth last night.
Oh, honeymoon, my God.
I don't know, maybe he was bitter, but it also could be, and you'll have to do this with the tasting team. Maybe the combination of the ingredients makes it taste like honey.
Well, I suppose.
Or a moon, I don't know. Like, maybe it tastes like the moon.
You'll have to ask them a month later and see if everything's okay.
Does this like taste like honey? Don't tell me now.
Yeah.
Tell me a month from now.
How do you feel?
Okay, well... I guess we'll take this over to the Brixton and have Michael whip us up a honeymoon cocktail. Another vaguely peach-colored drink from the long list.
Tell him to put food coloring in it. Yeah. Can you make this blue? It doesn't have to taste different.
The honeymoon cocktail. 2 ounces. Domaine DuPont Calvados. 1/2 ounce Benedictine. 1/2 ounce Marie Brizard Orange Curacao. 1/2 ounce lemon juice.
Okay, so we're here for the honeymoon cocktail. The gang's all here, and everyone's playing with their Pokeballs. I'm here with Nicole Pizzini.
Hi!
Hey, Nicole, where did you go on your honeymoon?
We went to Vieques, which is an island off of Puerto Rico. There's a bioluminescent bay there, and we went kayaking and saw the sparkles and the glowing
like
water.
Like at night?
Yeah!
Do you know what's... It's really cool if you, like... pee into the water and it splashes and then you get those bioluminescent...
That was disallowed. It's like,
in the ocean? Really? You weren't allowed to pee in the ocean?
We were not allowed to get in the ocean. You had to just kayak. You couldn't, like, hop in.
Well, you don't have to get in to see the splashes. In fact, it works better if you're standing outside to see the pee splashes. Hmm. So this was pre-Zika.
This was pre-Zika. In fact, the place where this bioluminescent bay is located is called Mosquito Bay.
Come to Mosquito Bay.
Yeah. Discount. They tell you that after you sign up for the tour.
Oh, they have a different word for it.
Well, they're just like, yeah, bioluminescent bay tour. And then it's like at Mosquito Bay.
Lovely.
Yeah.
So were there a lot of mosquitoes?
There were a lot of mosquitoes, yes. Well, because what makes it bioluminescent is the fact that it's sort of, it's kind of brackish water. And that's what supports this particular organism that glows, right?
Also works in the Sea of Cortez. That's how I know about the peeing thing.
That's how you know about the peeing thing. Well, we were not in a position where we were able to pee in the water. But you could run your hands through it.
So to speak.
And you could see as fish swam through it, they would glow because they were disturbing the water. And so there was a lot of like glow-in-the-dark kind of fish activity. That's it was cool. Neat. It was a cool thing.
So you went tropical for your honeymoon.
Yeah. We were married in November, so we're like, yeah, we're getting out of here.
Yeah, smart move.
It just started to snow, too.
Yeah, it snowed on our wedding day.
Yeah.
Kevin was there. He knows.
Awesome wedding. It was really nice. The Revolution. That was great.
Mr. Kevin Ratajczak. What is your ideal honeymoon?
That's an excellent question. I guess I'm kind of leaning to somewhere warm as well. I like that.
Sahara. That's warm.
Yeah, but tropical maybe, you know, I like the water. I'd love to go diving again or like snorkeling again, something really nice. You know what? Hawaii. I want to go back to Hawaii.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
Yeah, I love it. Because you've got everything. You know, you've got the perfect length of day. You've got a little bit of rain every day. Well, it depends on where you go, I guess, too. But like Kauai, that was just awesome. The temperature was perfect.
Yeah, Kauai is beautiful. Though, it's easier to say Guam. If you could choose Guam, it's easier to say.
I have not been to Guam.
It's further to get to, though.
Yeah.
It's, yeah, but it's different.
It's farther to get to.
It's like Guam is like a... It's like something that you like have behind your ear or something. Something you fish out of your between your toes.
You're on toddler humor today.
It's a podcast.
There's probably more mosquitoes in Guam. I feel like there'd be a lot of mosquitoes in Guam.
You don't use it.
I suppose.
I don't remember any mosquitoes in Guam.
I don't either. They probably pay their mosquito bill.
Yeah.
Chicago.
Guam is poor. It doesn't. They can't do that. And Rachel Rubin.
Hello.
What would you be your ideal honeymoon?
Well, I'd like to go someplace warm too, where I wouldn't have to think or do anything. But I'm also gonna go on another limb and say Mars Cheese Castle as opposed to
Guy. That was good.
So Mars Cheese Castle for your honeymoon.
That is nice.
Well, I want to go something different. I agree with what you say, and I would go with either of your suggestions, too. Mostly, I just want to go someplace where I don't have to put forth effort. Pretty good.
You don't have to think at Mars Cheese Castle.
No, you just put all of the beer and all of the cheese in your cart, and then you give your credit card to someone.
Yes.
You spend all of your money.
And then you put all of the beer and all of the cheese in your mouth.
Yes.
And
sounds like there should be a religion built on this place as being the afterlife.
Well, my church is Binny's, so I mean, that makes sense.
St. Binny.
Yeah.
So. And we're also here with Mr. Eric Martin.
Hello.
You are planning nuptials as we speak. Well, not as we speak, but like, you are a fiance, right?
Fiance.
A fiance.
I take umbrance with that term because I'm not French. I am of British descent, so I would appreciate if you use the British term, dirty slapper.
Okay. So you then are a dirty slapper.
I am indeed, yes.
Do you have a honeymoon planned?
We are going on a car tour of the Pacific Northwest. So starting in Seattle, driving south along the coast, and then ending up in Portland after a couple of weeks.
I bet that'll be fun.
It should be beautiful.
Are you seeing people you know?
Just a couple. Not too many, thankfully. Most of the time we'll be in the various wildernesses of Oregon, so I'm excited for that.
The honeymoon cocktail. I know a lot of you think there's no such thing, but alas, there is. 2 ounces of Calvados, a half ounce of Benedictine, a half ounce of orange curacao, and a half ounce of lemon juice. Shaken and strained, very simple drink, not super strong. They ask for, I did flame the twist. It's a lemon twist that's garnished, and they ask you to flame that.
Really?
What that does is it just creates a, just, you know, sparks the oils, caramelizes the surface of the drink a little bit with some sparked oils. It will add just a touch of sweetness to either the nose or the first sip, but usually once it's served, that kind of thing dilutes. It's usually a plating gimmick that people use at the bar. So, enjoy, guys.
Great, thank you. So we talked about the origin of the honeymoon traditionally a little bit, where it comes from and stuff like that. But I found out some additional information just recently in my readings that apparently it was not uncommon for the whole family to go on honeymoon with the couple. That was what you did. You got married and then you're going to go on vacation and all the parents.
It's called celebrate this union.
Yeah. Let's celebrate the whole thing ongoing. That's relatively recent, I guess.
That it's just
that it, that it's changed, yeah. That people said no.
Many people I know specifically go on honeymoon to get away from their family after the wedding.
Yeah. Exactly. You're just like, no, I don't want.
Yeah.
But I mean, the whole nature of marriage has changed over the centuries, and it used to be more of a business transaction. Not just about the dowry going to the father and stuff like that, but like husband and wife were a team that were business partners essentially.
Well, and people didn't move really.
No.
So
or vacation.
So
unless they did something bad.
Like,
they called that pilgrimage.
Still a joining of families a little bit, but like if no one ever moves out of town, like it's very much a joining of families. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and it was so much so that if you married the wrong person, you get dragged out of your house and stoned in some places at some times. Not recently, but it used to be that imperative that you married the right person. Not necessarily somebody of a better stock, but somebody who would complement your skills and make the union more profitable for the whole village.
I don't know. I think when we're in the Pacific Northwest, we'll see a lot of recently married couples stoned.
that's true in... Is it Washington? Or is it Port? Or is it Oregon? Or is it both?
Definitely Washington.
I know it's Colorado.
Oregon is more recent. But yes.
And it's just like a free-for-all now.
Yes.
Okay.
It's also on California's November ballot.
As the West Coast goes, the country follows.
We're in the fucking wrong place.
Well, it's coming to Illinois sooner as well. Didn't the governor, he just recently decriminalized small amounts of marijuana. So it's just a paltry fine as opposed to getting jail time legally in the rest of the state, even though it was probably like that in Chicago before.
Yeah, it was.
And depending on who you were.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, because I think the Illinois State Police also piped up and they're like, yeah, this is great, but, you know, we still reserve the right to arrest you. Like, it's not, you know, it's not mandatory.
Well,
they
I mean,
feel
if,
like you're still doing something wrong.
If you were like, if you're 17 and in the northern suburbs, then they're like, yeah, you should not do that.
Yeah.
We're going to confiscate it and you should go home.
Oh, man. If you are drinking and driving and you are 17, that is not what they do.
Oh, no. That's a different thing, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Illinois really needs to decriminalize a lot of these drug offenses because we need that room in the prisons for our politicians.
Yes. So,
not all of them,
no,
just the ones that get caught.
That was very good.
So we have a cocktail.
Yes, we do.
It smells lemony.
I was going to say it smells earthy.
I'm over here.
All right, I'm going to sniff it.
It's like an earthy lemon.
It's potent. Sniff it.
Yep. smells like lemonade. Mm-hmm. Like caramel lemonade, maybe.
Okay, I'm gonna try it. That is strange.
Oh.
Tastes kind of like a raisin.
Also, two phrases you wouldn't want to hear on a honeymoon.
I kind of like it. That's getting better.
It is a little raisiny.
What's in there that could be raisin?
Prune juice.
Is the apple brandy tasting like raisin?
Maybe.
Muskiness is the
key of that. Like dried apples and stuff?
I mean, that's what makes balsamic so good, is the vinegary muskiness.
Now, in America, they make this with applejack. In England, they make it with Calvados. But apparently it became popular on the West Coast in the U.S.
Yeah, Calvados or this cocktail?
This cocktail.
This tastes fine, but it's not the impression I would want on my honeymoon, I think.
Yeah.
A little sour, a little aged.
A little musky.
A little musky. Yeah.
Well, we're also kind of wondering if it has different meaning, like the actual term honeymoon cocktail. Like, could you imagine listening to a Kardashian speaking in 100 years? Capture some of the lingo that we have now, some of the popular language that we use that doesn't make sense, it's more colloquial, and then try to translate it 100 years from now, and it's like, what the fuck did you just say?
I think it really depends on the Kardashian, though. Not to defend the Kardashians or anything, but some of them are almost coherent.
I want you so much Deep Space Nine.
I just think, like, Kardashian.
I know every single time now.
That's all I can think about. It.
That's so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's
the Kardashians.
Kardashians.
Yes.
Way better.
Have you seen the Kim Kardashian pictures?
Wait, did they? Is it done? Oh my god.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
I think this could be the key to the new Star Trek series success. It's the missing element. They've never had a pop culture icon quite like the Kardashians, and they could incorporate them into the Star Trek universe.
In order to get them to participate willingly, or to participate, they would have to, like, chase them down in a Jeep and dart them from a distance.
Or just counts as willing participation.
What? I know, that's what I was saying.
Or just flatter them incessantly. I mean, they could count it as an acting credit. Can you imagine 30 years from now, Trekkies dressing as Kardashians dressed as Kardashians? This needs to happen. This is the American dream we have all longed for.
So I've seen the Next Generation. What are the Kardashians?
They have a spoon on their head.
Yeah.
That's new.
And they're kind of scaly and have ridged necks.
The makeup is really good in that show.
They're also very charming and insidious. And they have a very developed artistic culture and a huge victim complex. Even though they conquered a planet and subjugated them to years of torment.
They're like, I'm sad that I have a spoon on my head.
More like a, no one understands me, I'm so emotional. They're kind of emo.
But
and then
powerful.
They send their spy. And, but powerful. It's like, if you gave an emo kid an Uzi.
Yeah.
Because that was like the 90s.
Yeah, that's.
And you see how that turned out.
Oh, God. Actually, I should clear my palate because I have that sour beer, and then I'm going to a kind of sour drink too.
No, like if you told me, we have this barrel aged lemon drink, I'd be like, cool, that sounds great, but this isn't super great.
It's unique. It's musty. It strangely does still. It tastes like dried fruit.
Yeah, and what I like about it, it doesn't have that astringent sometimes that we get when we got a lot of lemon in the stuff.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have that.
She looks regal in that photo, and I've never used that word to describe her before. I mean, the forehead ridges do a lot for her facial structure.
That is awesome.
They kind of balance out her other assets.
There's a lot of other assets in this photo.
I think we now need to see Kanye as a Bajoran. Which would give a whole new dynamic to that relationship.
Nice.
Oh, I'm not nervous.
nerdy enough for this conversation. And I'm pretty nerdy.
Who is that?
Kim Kardashian.
It does not look like her.
No, it doesn't.
Well, you know, when it's only her neck up, it's harder to recognize her.
That's true.
Do you think they have ridges all the way down? They never explore that in the series.
Yeah, you never see like Nike Kardashians. You see kind of Nike Dax, and she's got like the spots all the way.
Oh yeah, and she makes that well known. I think she's said it at least twice.
Maybe those spots go all the way down.
Yeah.
She's very comfortable in her sexuality.
Yeah, she is.
The only other characters that are the, like, Orion slave women. And I don't think they choose to dress like that.
I know I saw an episode where it was a bunch of ladies ran the country, and there were a bunch of guys in, like, skimpy outfits because they had to, like... Yeah.
You're right, I forgot.
Serve the lady folks.
Because their outfits were terrible.
They were awful. They were like, is this supposed to be sexy? Because I need to go, like, wash out my brain.
That was...
They had feathered hair. They had
That was like still in the Roddenberry years.
Yeah, the original series. Like
no, it was Next Generation, but it was early on
was like
when Roddenberry was still
managing. You're right.
So those ladies seemed pretty comfortable about what was going on.
That's very true.
I'm very glad that this conversation has detoured from honeymoons to Star Trek.
I talked about the honeymoon I'm going on, but my ideal honeymoon would be... to be on the Star Trek Starship Enterprise, going around a grand trek of the galaxy.
Risa?
You're
gonna go get a Horgon?
No, I don't like easy. I prefer the chase. So maybe Kronos. I think that would be fun.
The trouble with a honeymoon on a starship is you're trapped around a bunch of people all the time. And you can't leave.
Full of farts. And it's just full of farts.
Yeah, a lot of recycled air farts.
That is a positive point about Data they never talked about.
No farting.
No flashing.
Are you sure that wasn't part of it?
Neither.
He probably doesn't even like mind if you fart, because what does he care?
Yeah, he doesn't.
He just analyzes the components.
Yeah, he's like, oh, you need to get more iron in your diet or something.
Yeah.
He probably practices to be more human.
So if you had to, you know, be trapped in a like a pod or something with any of the Star Trek characters, it sounds like Data's the way to go.
Yeah, or Odo.
Of course, they do all eat synthesized food, so maybe it's formulated so that they don't have that problem.
Perhaps.
Yeah,
they could have thought all that out.
I'm sure. I mean, they have a non-currency economy. They've got to have flatulence-free food.
I mean, they definitely want to minimize flammable materials on that ship, so the methane content needs to stay low. Yeah.
Whenever they beam back to the ship, they add just a little bit of Beano.
The farts out.
Introduce it to your DNA.
This is something we all need. Teleportation to remove farts. Gene Roddenberry never thought of this.
No. And the world is material.
Or maybe that's why they go to these different planets to begin with. It's just to crop dust everything and then come back. That's the secret they don't tell you, is like they harness all of the parts from the starships.
5-year voyage.
And that's how they like terraform the planets. That's how they like create like an ozone.
Genesis.
Yeah.
Yes.
There you go. They store all the parts up, and then that's what they release on those like Terra Genesis projects.
It's a brand new series of commercials for cryo-frozen Jamie Lee Curtis. It gets better the more you drink it.
No, there's an ounce or two of lemon in it. Isn't there an ounce of lemon in that puppy?
Yeah, there's an ounce of lemon juice.
I think it needs a little more, like, potency.
Are we chasing that flavor to see what's making it taste like grandma?
Okay, now here is a little bit of Benedictine. Have you had Benedictine?
I don't remember if I did. What makes Benedictine? What's in here?
About 1,000 different secret herbs and spices.
So it's not a bitter, but it's like a...
But it's another secret...
Stings the nostrils.
27 different herbs and spices, to be exact.
Is it an aperitif? A digestif? Well, it's not. Maybe it's not Italian, so it's neither. French? What is... Is this French?
It's French. Made by monks.
Yeah.
Am I supposed to drink it before or after dinner?
Whenever you want.
Do monks eat dinner, or do they just have little snacks in between each time they have to say mass?
They're not even allowed to have the white bread. Only the crusts.
It is sweet, but it's still
I understand why. White bread is for Satan.
Oh, it's potent, though. It's sweet, but it's got to burn. Not on my tongue, but like my throat wound up, so there's a little bit of taste for that.
I think this is a lot of the flavors that are coming through in this drink.
It smells wonderful.
Yeah, doesn't it?
See, I thought it was sweet as heck, but then you feel it as it goes down. I'm trying to see the percentage on it. Oh, yeah. It's 80 proof. Yes.
If you reduced the alcohol content, this could almost be a cologne. Almost.
It's got an excellent aftertaste.
Actually,
it has a really nice balance of high and low notes.
So you could, like, dab it behind your ears?
It might get a little sticky.
Right next to the Guam.
If you replace kind of the sugar smell with something like a tobacco smell, then you have a clone. That's what you have. And it'd be less sticky. So I like the little honey kicker that's in there.
Yeah, there is. Yep. I like nice. The honey. Yep.
I think I'm going to wear
this.
It
looks like an expensive bottle.
Honestly, I think I may have liked this drink better without the apple brandy.
Applejack may have been a bit crisper.
Would have burned more.
It's got more of a kick.
Yeah, that's the raisiny.
Yep. That's where we're getting like the raisiny musty flavor. It's the not the Benedictine, it's the
what?
Calvados.
We're dissecting this drink.
Yeah.
I feel like this drink needs something else. It's good, but it needs something else.
Yeah.
Maybe more Benedictine. Maybe less apple brandy.
Maybe just
lemon,
like,
to be honest.
Three parts Benedictine, one part lemon juice.
It should just be a martini, yeah. Like, we should just not have this drink, probably. It's
fine. You know what? I kind of liked it.
That's good.
For what it is, I kind of liked it. It would be hard to ask for.
If it was incorporated into wedding ceremonies, it would be a passable ceremonial drink.
Sure.
I don't think it's very pleasurable, personally. I'm glad that my honeymoon we'll be drinking craft beers.
Yeah.
As opposed to that.
I'd rather drink... I wouldn't say anything else, but, like, there are many, many things I would want to drink before this drink.
If it was put in front of you, you would drink it.
You know, that just happened, and I mostly did not drink it.
Okay.
Yeah, so she's a definite no.
Yeah. It's not actively repulsive.
I get that.
I'd say it's pleasant enough. It just isn't super distinctive.
Yeah.
And when you taste the Benedictine by itself, you're like, whoa! So yeah, a little more of that flavor might be nice, or a little more burn. Maybe a little bit less lemon.
Maybe
but to me, it's not unpleasant at all. It's
I like the raisininess of it to some extent.
Maybe some like fresh herbs that would complement the Benedictine.
You know what?
Oh my gosh. Throw some sage in there or something.
Or something to brighten it would be nice.
And you want that bright honeymoon.
Or lemon balm, which is often overlooked, but would complement the flavors pretty well.
Lemon balm?
Yes. Complement the lemon flavor.
Lemongrass.
Lemongrass is very fibrous stem and has they're similar flavors, but the lemon balm is a softer leaf, much more like sage than lemongrass. And it also has a slightly medicinal tone to it, but I think it would still be nice.
This.
Yeah. I think it would still be nice in this drink because of the lemon. I think the lemon could be stronger, actually, in this drink.
Well, very nice. I'm glad that we just dissected the honeymoon cocktail. So everyone, continue listening to the show. Follow us on all the social media stuff, the Twitters, the Facebooks, all the other things that we do and have fun with. Keep on listening, keep thinking and drinking. Until next time, bye now. Thank you.
be such a bore. She puts me on the train and sends me out to explore.
Hey everybody, thanks for listening to the Monster in a Glass podcast. I'd like to thank Jason Cruz for researching our content. Our regular tasting team, Rachel Rubin, Kevin Ratajczyk, Bethany Lang, and Nicole Pizzini, for joining me in the grueling task of tasting the cocktails we discuss. The Brixton and their bartender, Michael Donnelly, for letting us cavort in their liquid playground. Dan Cruz for art direction and editing. And Mark Piani for the music at the head of the show. Go to blackliverproject.com to see the show archive, become a member, contribute to the project, and get in touch with us. And follow us on Facebook and Twitter to get the latest news and, as it happens, updates during live events. And as always, if you're into thinking and drinking, let us blacken your liver.
Staring at statues of saints. Look, the patron saint of unhappily married women. See you.